Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'd like to welcome my favorite author back to the program, Julie Clam.
Hi, thank you.
Hi, Julie.
That's my high, my very high-pitched hi, thank you. I'm so happy to be here. You're my favorite interviewer on my favorite radio show.
All right. Well, this is starting off well.
Mm-hmm. And we could just keep going back and forth with compliments until the half hour stops.
Well, I have a wonderful excuse to talk to you because you have a new book, and isn't it coming out tomorrow?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Now,
it's coming out tomorrow on my birthday.
Yeah. Now, how did you arrange that? How did you arrange to get a book come out on your birthday?
It's a terrible thing that I think this is like the third year in a row that I've had a book come out around my birthday, and it's not the way I would want it, except that this year I'm just going to ask everybody for birthday presents to buy my book. But the hard part is on Facebook, is that you're like doing this self-promotion, and then in the middle of it, everybody's like, oh, and it's your birthday too? Like, we haven't heard enough from you about all this book stuff coming up, and now we all have to wish you a happy birthday, and I think it's overkill. But I'm thinking that my next book, I'm going to try to time for like the spring so that I don't have that overlap, because the truth is at this age I'm not really celebrating my birthday that heavily anyway.
Oh, come on now. It's all good having the book come out right on your birthday, and your publicist said, well, she can talk to you today or she could talk to you tomorrow. And I thought, well, I can't call on her birthday because she's going to be talking to Anne and Laura and Patty and all these other people on her birthday. And that's because she's written this book about friends. It's called Friend Keeping, A Field Guide to the People You Love, Hate, and Can't Live Without.
That's it. Yeah, well, I know. I'm actually going to be getting my hair cut tomorrow, I think, so. But I'll be talking to everybody.
You're going to get your hair cut.
Mm-hmm.
I think the cab has just pulled up on the curb for you. Are you sure you have that schedule? Isn't the haircut supposed to be happening right now?
Wouldn't that be nice? I did have a phone interview the other day that I was making pancakes during. You know, I don't usually multitask to that level, but I do what I have to.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
So what was the genesis of this project? You wrote a couple books in a row about dogs, and mm-hmm. now suddenly we're talking about human relationships.
Right.
This is a big transition.
Mm-hmm. Well, I may at some point write about dogs again, but I think I pretty much said what I needed to say about them, and then I was ready to move on to someone who doesn't regularly pee on my rug, which would be my friend. And I had started thinking about the whole sort of notion of friendship and the fact that adult friendship, there isn't as much attention paid to adult friendship. It's much more about, you know, if you see the books about, there's a lot of books about, kids' friendships and things like that. But there isn't that much about grown-up friendships. And I think because a lot of it is we just don't have time to do what you need to do to maintain your friendships. But you want them to be there. They're very important. I sort of liken it to the bridges in New York City that are, you know, we depend on, and they're, you know, all supposedly going to crumble at the same time because nobody's working on the infrastructure. And, you know, with, you know, your friendships, you want to have these strong relationships that you don't just work on when you need something or want to celebrate something. So that's kind of where it came from. And I felt like most of the stuff that I read about friendships was, or saw about friendships, were like the sort of platitude Hallmark cards, you know, friends are like flowers, and, you know, the little two little kitties, it just didn't really apply to the things that were going on in my life with my friendships. so that was the that was how the whole thing started.
In the book, you state that my friends are my best quality. My friends are my fortune, you say.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Well, I think that you can tell a lot about a person by the company they keep. And I think that I feel like I have such magnificent, caring, smart, funny friends that it must say something about me. But I try very, very hard not to take them for granted. And I think that's sort of the basis for a lot of what I'm talking about in the book. And also, being a good friend without having to, sort of give yourself over to completely to some person and or their needs. Sort of take care of both of yourself and them at the same time is important.
Julie Clam joins us. Her new book is Friend Keeping. You tell us a lot about yourself in this book, and you surprised me with a lot of the things that you said, because I just went, wow, like you've thought a lot about this, and you let us know who your friends are and how you made them, and I'm assuming these are real names of your friends?
All of my close friends are real names. Some of the less close people are different names.
Okay.
Yeah.
I particularly like your descriptions of your friend Jancy.
she's a funny, funny girl. Yes, girl. We're still girls, even though we're nearing 100 years old. But but yeah, I have written about her before, and she's a writer, and she's written about me before. Sort of a funny, like, we go back and forth. And sometimes I'll call her and say, did you use this story already? Because I want to use it. And she says, I don't know. I don't remember if I wrote it or not. And then we just decide that other people won't remember either.
Mm.
But yeah, she's a very funny, smart person that, it's like a friend that I met in adult life. I met her when I was in my 20s. So we've been friends for like 20 years now, which is kind of amazing when you start looking at things that way, that, that you could have a friend. It's like, I don't know. I'm always like marveling at that I could have friendships this long, but The longer you live, the longer they are. And I guess that's all because my birthday's coming up. So I'm thinking a lot about my age.
Mm. So this is your last day being 29.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, enjoy it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm excited because soon I can run for president.
Very good. Can't wait for that campaign.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So.
Because we all want a lot more. We're all really interested in hearing some more campaigns these days, right?
Ouch. you talk about how important it is. You compare friendships to bridges and the fact that they need to be maintained.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently being truthful is a big part of that process.
Mm-hmm.
But you say you need to be selective about sharing secrets with your friends. You don't mm-hmm. want to share all of them. And then there's the friends that go out and broadcast your secrets. So you have to know who they are.
Right. Right. It's the kind of thing that, it can be a very delicate issue. And I think it's just really important. There are things that there are things that you want to share with people that you want to get somebody's feedback on, but you really need to make sure that you're confiding in the right person. Somebody who's discreet and careful. And I think I tell the story in there about how long it takes me to tell Jancy a secret because she's always so worried about that she's not going to keep it by mistake.
Mm.
And so she's, telling me, like, maybe you shouldn't tell me. Maybe you should don't tell me. If it's really important, don't tell me. And I'm like, how important could it be? I mean, it's me. You know, it's like I'm not going to be telling you about, you know, the Bay of Pigs or something. It's you know, it's going to be something minor, but she takes it so seriously, very, very mm-hmm. concerned. She'll fall asleep and start talking about it in her sleep, and, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, we live in a time where our friends are dealing with a lot of stuff, and you have some very powerful things in this book about how to deal with these situations. You don't give advice particularly. You just talk about it, and you observe that mm-hmm. everywhere we look, someone has cancer. So mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. so how do we act? What do we do? How do we be mindful of what they need and what not what we need?
Right. Well, I think, you know, what one of the things that I sort of stress is that everybody is different, and what one person may need when they're going through something is exactly not what another person needs. And I have a couple of friends at the moment who are ill, and I know exactly what kind of things make one feel better, and it's the opposite of what makes the other one feel better. And you know, I mean, that's the thing about being friends with somebody before they go through something, is that usually you do know them, but nobody knows how they're going to feel when they're going through something. And there are people that they want to talk about science with it. You know, they want to stick with, like, hard facts. There's other people who are very spiritual, and, you know, and you really do need to see what a person needs, and really just be there for them to, you know, talk and express themselves. And I think a lot of people who are sick, it drives them crazy that everybody's always giving them advice, and you have to do this and that.
Or they don't want to talk about it.
Right.
You talk about how when you were pregnant you had some problems, and how one of the best things that a friend did for you was to talk to you about completely unrelated stuff,
right,
to distract you from your own situation.
Yeah. I mean, it's like living with something, living with cancer, it's all, you know, as an example, it's something that's consuming. You know, when you're being treated, you're having all sorts of, the chemotherapy and you know, doctor's appointment and scans and everything. And it's like, you know, you can't get a break from your disease in that way. And that's one, you know, I had one friend, and it was, you know, with me, with when I had preeclampsia, I knew that, that eventually I would give birth and it would be, you know, hopefully everything would be okay and it would be gone. I felt like, you know, that, you know, there's the part of yourself that didn't used to have that. And, you know, you want to find that person who doesn't talk about this disease all the time or feel it or just be this disease. So my friend Jancy would call me up and read Us magazines to me on the phone. I was on bed rest. I mean, I could have read Us magazines, but she would read it with, like, very funny commentary.
Uh-huh.
And talk about, like, the most ridiculous things. And we would go off on tangents for, like, long tangents about, you know, discussions of Ben Affleck or whatever it was at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Probably Rudolph Valentino. Long ago.
Good one. Rudy Valley.
Right.
Julie Clam joins us. Her book is Friend Keeping, A Field Guide to the People You Love, Hate, and Can't Live Without. You have a wonderful way of closing each chapter with a summation or a pithy thought or an expression of emotion. And these are things that, you, as a reader, you really look forward to them. And in one chapter you say, quote, "When people go off the deep end, it doesn't mean they have to stay there.
Mm-hmm.
When When they come back, it's nice to have a friend waiting with a warm towel.
Yes.
I love that.
Oh, well, you know, I mean, sometimes people go nuts about something. Sometimes people are going through something in their life and they're not themselves, and you feel like they disappeared, but you know, many times it's a temporary insanity. I think one of the things I've found is that I've had a lot of friendships that have had some kind of break in them for some reason or another. You know, either somebody moved and we just weren't as close, or, you know, it was a time where the things that we were going through were so different that it was hard to relate and hard to be together, and we could come back. And I think with all of the friendships that you have in your life, there can be times where where somebody is off, you know, with a boyfriend you really can't stand, or or they're just doing something new that's hard for you to be a part of, or something like that. You know, with me, it was, I think, a lot in college, was that my friends that I'd always been friends with, and we always did like the same things together, and then suddenly, you know, one of them would be like, partying late at night, you know, going out to these late parties and doing this whole thing, and I was still doing the stuff that I was doing before, and I was, you know, it wasn't like they'd gone crazy. I was just not into that. I eventually, we all got back to the same boring page.
Uh-huh. Well, you've obviously had to learn how to adjust. And a moment ago, I talked about that when people go off the deep end sentiment that you expressed. But then on the other hand, you kind of have a warning about trying to analyze whether someone's really just being a drain. You describe them as relationship remoras.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We need to be vigilant for someone that's just draining us, and it's not really a friendship.
Right. No, yeah. I mean, I think so many people have gone through that experience where, you know, it might start that a person is going through something, and then you feel like they're always going through something, and everything is always all about whatever their needs are, and you know, you find yourself, you know, dreading spending time with them, or dreading their phone calls, or you know, whatever it is. There are a lot of people who, you know, different people get, you know, fill themselves up in different ways, and you know, I always had a lot of friends and family and a therapist, and tried to, you know, not make anybody my main dumping ground for anything. Although, you know, I have been through some really rough stuff, and you know, and needed a friend, and there was one person who was just really good at it, or had been through it, who could be really helpful to me, and you know, but that's hopefully something that's a temporary situation. But yeah, I mean, I think I had it a lot more when I was younger and less confident, you know, where I didn't realize that it was okay for me to be like, you know what, enough, I don't want to, you are sucking the life out of me. You know, just feeling like exhausted by somebody.
So it's taking ownership of your feelings in a way.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I know sometimes, you know, it'll happen when a friend is maybe struggling with something that you're not struggling with, and there's this sense that, like, okay, well, you know, she really, you know, wants to meet somebody, and I have somebody, or she, she's been out of work for a while and I've got a job, and you sort of have this, like, I have to be, I'm fortunate in this situation, so I'm going to be, just keep saying, okay, whatever you need, whatever. And then at some point it's like, okay, enough, it's not fun. It's not fun to always be dumped on. And
so it's a chronic situation. It's not just a temporary crisis. Yeah, it's somebody that they're always draining you.
Right. I mean, I know it with these people. They jump from one thing to another. There's always something. And, in the end, it isn't good for you to do. It's not fair.
But when you make somebody mad, why do you want to force them to tell you what it was that made them mad? I'm trying to figure that one out.
Me personally?
Yeah.
I don't think you can really fix a situation if you don't know. I'm very into that, partially because I do feel like when somebody is angry at you about something, it has much more to do with them than it does you. Come to somebody's party, drunk and smash up their house, and they're mad at you, that's not their problem. But
right, I'm sure you have to explain that frequently. Okay.
So, you know me. Yeah. You know me, Vic. I started my afternoon wild turkey.
That's why you don't go up to Brooklyn that much.
No, I don't like to go to Brooklyn because I'm too drunk.
It's like going to Mozambique. You can't find your way back home.
Exactly. They have crazy trains there.
Okay. How did you figure out? I'm absolutely amazed. You talk about this film, Total Recall, and a character named Quato, and you say that you have somehow figured out a way to deal with your inner Quato, and I find this to be very impressive because I just don't know. That would take a lot for me to do. Could you explain to our listeners what that's all about?
Well, I mean, the Quato in the movie is this like Yoda type, guru character. That's not what mine is. I was saying it's like this, this sort of monster that comes out of my stomach, and it's actually all of my bad, low minded feelings, the envy and jealousy and Schadenfreude and all of that is like this, sort of simmers in there. And then, when it gets too much, it's like, breaks through my shirt. I think it's always a work in progress. But again, it's like, if you're so miserable about somebody else's success, or jealous about somebody else's relationship or whatever, there's something in your own life that you could be working on and fixing. It's like, I found that there was a point in my life where I was so obsessed with this woman who I worked with and her, the ease with which she went through life that wasn't how it felt to me. And I was really young then. It was like a gigantic distraction, and I wasn't really committed to anything in my life at that time except, going, that person is doing this and this person has that and I have nothing and I can't do anything, and but it's such an ongoing process that there always are people who have something happening at the same time as you, and you compare yourself to them. I mean, in the book world, there's a lot of, people's books coming out at the same time, and that these authors are like checking each other's Amazon numbers, and
I don't believe it.
I only know it because some authors will say to me, I saw on Amazon, you were at, blah, and I'm like, why were you looking at my Amazon numbers?
Yeah, I see in People magazine that my book is two books up above yours in the picture, Jamie. Right?
Jamie's wonderful. We're talking about Jamie Attenberg, whose new book, The Middlesteins, is out. It's a great book, and she deserves everything. Plus, her book is fiction, mine is nonfiction, so we're not competing.
Okay. Well, we have just enough time to touch social media. There's a lot of people that say Facebook and Twitter and these platforms really degrade friendships, but you've had a slightly different experience, haven't you?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think, you know, I work alone, and I work from home, and, you know, it's a chance. It's sort of like, it started out as sort of like an office water cooler for me to have these, to make these contacts through Twitter and Facebook. And I would, you know, I mean, it wasn't like just arbitrary people. They were either people that I knew from some point in my life or people who were in the same business, you know, as me. I mean, I've met, you know, fabulous editors and publicists and publishers and people like that. And, you know, I mean, it's not networking to, like, you know, climb up somehow, but it's nice to have people who have the same concerns as you do and understand the same issues that you do when you need somebody to talk to. And that is something about, I think, more Twitter than Facebook, that, you know, people end up being in, like, networks of followers or people that they follow that are in the same business.
Well, Julie, I'm looking at the clock, and it seems like we just started talking about your new book, but I see we're running out of time here. So all I can say to listeners out there who value their friendships, there's a lot in this book. It's Friend Keeping, A Field Guide to the People You Love, Hate, and Can't Live Without. It's a new book by Julie Klamm. It'll be out tomorrow on her birthday.
And
happy birthday, Julie.
Thank you, Vic.
You've been listening to The Book Nook on WYSO. Thanks for listening. And take care of your friends. It's always a pleasure to talk to Julie Klamm. She wrote my favorite book about dogs. It's called You Had Me at Wolf. Next week, we're going to have a very different dog book. Richard M. Cohen wrote it. It's called I Want to Kill the Dog. Richard Cohen is married to Meredith Vieira, and she has a dog that drives Richard crazy. And I think he's just kidding about wanting to kill the dog, but we'll find out next week in the Book Nook as we talk to Richard Cohen about I Want to Kill the Dog. The Book Nook is recorded at Soundspace in Yellow Springs and engineered by Chris Hertzler.